This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North convenience stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Wiggins America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like,
whatever, dude.
Hey! Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand.
You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
This is Wiggins America, another great hour ahead. Roy, old Roy, is coming in at the end of the hour. We're going to talk books and we're going to talk robots. Guess where that conversation is going to go? Also, in the very next segment, right after this, Smart Approaches to Marijuana's director, Will Jones, is going to be on the show. We're going to talk about Missouri and Illinois in relation to a place like Oregon. Hey, this is what it looks like when you have the states being the laboratories of democracy, right? Some go too far, and then everybody goes, oh, that was too far. But is Missouri or is Illinois too far down that road? Well, we're not Oregon. We'll find out how we can not become Oregon. We can stay away from it. I told you that we were going to talk about John Lovitz in this segment, and I am going to fulfill that promise. Here's the thing. I've been following John Lovitz's Twitter all week. I mean, he has just been on a tear, and I love it. And most of it's about Israel, and he's exposing things that I wouldn't say nobody else has access to, but sometimes celebrities, I don't know, they can get things that other people can't. And I think he's not necessarily doing that, but he's definitely got people who are seeking him out and saying, please share this. And he is. And it's about what happened on October 7th and also things that have happened since October 7th in Israel. John Lovitz is, of course, Jewish, as far as I know. I mean, I say that and now I go, wait a minute. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, of course he is. He did all the Hanukkah stuff on Saturday Night Live and he did the songs on Hoishul, on Shlomo. Remember all that stuff? Well, anyway. John Lovitz has been great this week. Maybe it was all leading into this interview that he did with Fox News Digital, which I did not know he was going to do. I've just been following him, and all of a sudden I'm getting people texting me, oh, did you see what John Lovitz just said to Fox News Digital? I said, no, send it over. So I watched that, basically pulling some quotes here. He was, of course, on Saturday Night Live. He said in that interview about late-night comedy and the state of late-night comedy, specifically about Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Kimmel, and Seth Meyers, he said, I don't like it. I don't like it. They were comedy shows, and now, except for Jimmy Fallon, they've all become very political. And for me, it's just, it's too much. I mean, Johnny Carson, would you know, he would do two or three jokes about whoever was president then or what was going on then, and that was it. But they were entertainment shows. He said, I know all those guys, and they're very nice guys, very talented. I know Seth, I know Stephen Colbert, I know Jimmy Kimmel. I think they're funny, you know. But when they started doing the political stuff, like, so one-sided, it's like, and that's all it is. The whole thing, it's just like, that's not the shows I used to go on. You know, it was The Tonight Show and David Letterman. And Lovitz recalled how during his Letterman-era late show appearances, it was truly a comedy show, but in the talk show format, and how interviews were more structured as a routine so Letterman could help highlight his guests ahead of the taping. I don't know if you knew that they did that, but they do a lot of prep on those, where a lot of times, especially very, very accomplished comedians will basically just do jokes, and the host is there to set the joke up for them. I don't know if you knew how much prep went into those. Dana Carvey was always one that you could see the host just basically asking a setup question and then letting Dana do a bit. And now they're not all that way. I actually prefer the ones who aren't, but that's what a lot of them are. And he's saying it's just not like he's not even enjoying going on those shows when he gets the opportunity anymore. So that's what he was talking about with Fox News Digital. Now, on his Twitter, though, there were some things that I thought, I want to share this just because it's information and it gets lost in the shuffle. I think a lot of times we get to where we're talking about, you know, who's following who, who's saying what about Palestine, Hamas, about Israel, and we forget what actually happened. I mean, this wasn't that long ago. John Lovitz shared this, and he says, quote, "After reading this, I pray Israel wipes out Hamas and frees the Palestinians in Gaza and the Israelis living in fear with these murdering terrorists. Ceasefire, F blank, 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 you." Here is the tweet that he shared that he said that about. Martina Medvin is the source of this. She says Palestinian terrorists didn't just rape women. She says, in this instance, at least one instance, a woman was tied to a bed, raped, and then a knife stuck in her vagina and all of her internal organs cut out. This is the kind of stuff that we really can't forget. In the midst of this war, this is some of the most brutal terrorism we've ever seen in our lives. Hopefully, it's some of the most brutal terrorism we will ever have seen in our lives, because it is animalistic and disgusting. And for people in America, this is where I'm amazed that we've gotten, that there should be no moral ambiguity about this. Why would you ever support Hamas or even support systems that support Hamas? But we've gotten to a place where our morals are so cloudy that there are some people, and it's not a huge percent, but it is a percentage of people in America, are now outspoken about their support for these things. And a lot of times they may not even know what they're supporting. And that's why I share that, not to be gruesome, but because I think it's important. Quick break, right back with smart solutions, smart approaches to marijuana.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
it's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos,
maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, happy Thanksgiving weekend to you. Hope it's been great so far and continues to be great. Director of Community Engagement and Outreach for Smart Approaches to Marijuana, Will Jones, is on the phone with us. We've had you on, Will, I think it was almost exactly a year ago. How's it going?
I'm doing all right. Glad to be back on. Thanks for having me.
So I saw an article pop up from the Wall Street Journal about Oregon. Now, I am nowhere near Oregon, and most people listening to us right now are in either Illinois or Missouri, so we're not exactly well-versed in the laws of Oregon. But they made news with their decriminalization of all drugs in, I think it was 2020. Well, the Wall Street Journal is now reporting that there is a massive backlash against that law because, surprise, surprise, drug use has just run rampant. I don't know if you're following this, but if you are, could you tell us a little bit more?
Yeah, we're definitely following what's happening there. And as you said, drug use has increased substantially in Oregon. And as you said, to a certain extent, it shouldn't come as a surprise. What Oregon did with their decriminalization law was we view it as really irresponsible in the way that they went about it. The treatment, so many programs for people that would develop problems. Nothing was in place. They just said essentially people could do whatever drugs they want to do without consequences. And we've seen, I mean, there was an article that just came out in the AP 2 days ago that their fentanyl crisis there is getting out of hand. Interestingly enough, people now in Oregon are wanting to reverse that law that was passed that decriminalized all drugs. And so we're working actually there in Oregon with people at the grassroots level to kind of help reverse that law. So we're going to see what happens with that. But it's just like you said, drug use has increased. No surprise. People are seeing the consequences and people aren't liking it.
Well, this is kind of a test. I mean, Oregon has gone further, as far as I know, than any other state has with the legalization, I should say decriminalization, of all drugs. What now is the solution for them that you're working on?
So it would definitely be peeling back measure 110, which is the measure that was passed that decriminalized drugs there. And again, having a more responsible policy with drugs. We don't want to encourage people, you know, our drug policies that we have, we don't want to encourage people to use drugs that, as we're seeing in Oregon, can increase substance abuse, that can increase people that are struggling with abuse problems. This is not helpful when there's kind of a encouraging atmosphere around drug use, which is what, you know, how Measure 110 has gone down in Oregon. And so we definitely want to see Measure 110 repealed in something that would be instead have laws that would be more that would discourage drug use more.
Yeah, Will, I think when I read this article from Wall Street Journal, it just to me was a harbinger of, hey, look, this is what could happen. And it really brought to mind the interview that you and I did last year at about this time, because you guys look all over the country and you say, well, this state has done this. If you do that, you will probably have the same outcomes, you know, because everybody's doing this kind of in different orders and different ways. So when I thought, well, that's what Oregon's dealing with. They're dealing with tremendous buyer's remorse over this decriminalization law for all drugs. So I thought, well, Will, you'd know a little bit more about where we're at in both Illinois and Missouri. You know, Missouri just passed the amendment, I think it was last year, the year before, that legalized all marijuana in the state of Missouri. And I got to tell you personally, where I'm standing right now, there's somebody in this building, because this is a multi-floor building that we're in St. Louis, you know, somewhere below my feet or above my head, there is a resident in this building that now has decided, well, now that it's legal, I'm going to smoke pot all day, every day, and everybody else just has to deal with that. Like, these are the things that I didn't even think would be a ramification of passing these laws. But where is Missouri? We'll start with there. As far as where you guys are working and where you think we're headed in Missouri?
Missouri, you know, as we're seeing this, not just Missouri, but states across the country, we're seeing a lot of states that are, you know, moving down the road of full recreational legalization of marijuana. And that's the first step for people. Let me be clear here. There's some people that have a broader agenda of decriminalizing and even potentially legalizing all drugs. That is, some of the organizations that have advocated for marijuana legalization and that have worked to change marijuana policies, their broader aim that they do not hide is the legalization of all drugs. There are, that's an open stated objective of some organizations out there. I think some people, though, when they're voting for as we've seen in states that have voted for marijuana legalization, their concern is primarily just they don't want anyone to have an arrest record or go to jail for smoking a joint, right? And so these organizations with broader aims in terms of decriminalization of all drugs and potentially legalization of all drugs, they've taken advantage of people's desire to see a different approach to marijuana policy, and they've really, I think, exploited that to push drug laws a lot farther and more extreme than anybody really wanted or imagined, which is what you're seeing in Missouri and especially in Illinois as well. You mentioned that. And we're seeing increased use. I don't think it should come as a surprise, but we're seeing it as increased use in marijuana use, and especially among young people in states that have legalized marijuana. And that's because we have such a massive proliferation of stores and of commercialization of advertisements, on whether that on social media advertisements, whether that's billboards and other things like that. We're seeing increases in almost every state that's legalized. And so I think that's what we're seeing definitely in Illinois and also as well beginning in Missouri.
Yeah, Will, last time I talked to you, you made a very important distinction. And I've really held on to that because I thought that's a very smart, it's a smart approach to marijuana. Lo and behold, that's the name of your organization. You guys make a distinction between legalization and decriminalization of marijuana for the reasons that we've now seen in both of these states that I sit on the border of Illinois and Missouri here, that it becomes, instead of just, the dude who wanted to smoke a joint on New Year's Eve, it becomes a giant industry with now lobbyists and all this money in it once it becomes legal, that it's really hard to put the genie back in the bottle with.
100%. And while we're seeing a lot more buyer's remorse with decriminalization of all drugs in Oregon, and again, we're working to push back Measure 110 there, when it comes to marijuana commercialization, you have such a big lobby. We have big tobacco companies, some of the top, like Altria, the parent company of Marlboro, has invested billions of dollars into the cannabis industry. We have Heineken, Molson Coors, Blue Moon, Corona. All of these top alcohol and tobacco companies have invested into the cannabis industry. And so it's really hard once a state has gone down this road to push that back, because just like you said, the lobbyists that are in play, just like we see with, Big Pharma, we saw with Big Tobacco in the past, once they're able to kind of get their foothold, it's kind of hard to push back against that. But what we are seeing is increases when you have massive commercialization and glamorization of a substance, right? Naturally, use increases. And cannabis use disorder is rising in states that have legalized, which is of huge concern. Mental health cases, crisis from some of these high-potent products, that is increasing as well, something that we're looking at and following, as well as a lot of families, and we're actually working with parents across the country that are seeing this, but parents that have had kids that have committed suicide because of their cannabis use. And cannabis interacts with your brain in a much different way than, say, alcohol or nicotine. It has, particularly when people start at a young age, mental health issues abound with use of that, and that's something that we're seeing. And again, that's very different when you're talking about marijuana than just saying, if someone has a joint, we're not going to prosecute that. Legalization, commercialization, which is what Missouri and Illinois have done, says, okay, well, you can have the stores, you can have the advertisements, you can have, you can promote it, you can have different types of advertisements, et cetera. And that's a far cry from just saying, if you happen to have a joint, we're going to look the other way.
Yeah. So do you, at Smart Approaches to Marijuana, are you counseling with parents? I mean, what is your role then if a parent has had an issue with their kid or, God forbid, suicide happen? What is your role there with a parent?
So we are not we're not an intervention or treatment organization. We do connect people at times to those resources if we come across, as someone that's in need of that. But our primary role is really to elevate the voice, to bring these stories to public awareness, to bring these stories before legislators. And so when there is a parent that has lost a child to suicide from cannabis use, or in some cases, parents have lost kids to people driving under the influence of marijuana. That's something that's also significantly increased in states that have legalized. So like fatalities from people driving under the influence have more than doubled in places like Washington and Oregon and other places like that. So oftentimes when a parent loses their child tragically in a way like that, they have a real mission and passion to share their story so that it doesn't happen to other parents, to other families, to other kids. And so that's where anyone that's looking to tell their story, to kind of amplify that story, we are working with them, partnering with them to bring their voice to the national level to say what's actually happening, what it looks like when a state commercializes marijuana and the impact that that can have on youth.
Will, if somebody is listening to us talking about this right now and they either are in that situation or they know somebody who is, or they just want to connect with you otherwise and hear about some of those resources, where do you want them to go?
Go to www.learnaboutsam.org and reach out to, just shoot us an email from there. Contact is available from there. And we're definitely, again, looking to partner with anyone that's kind of gone, seen the unfortunate consequences of these policies. We want to help anyone that's trying to get their story out there. So go to www.learnaboutsam.org and get in touch with us.
SAM being short for Smart Approaches to Marijuana. Smart Approaches to Marijuana. Will, thank you so much for your time and your continued work, and hopefully we can catch up again soon.
Thanks so much, Ryan. Appreciate it.
We are going to talk about writing coming up next. I know it's not a topic we typically talk a whole lot about on this show, but it's Thanksgiving weekend, a little bit of a break from the normal. We'll do that next here on Wiggins America. It's a good time to talk about this over this holiday weekend. Welcome to it. Glad you're here, Wiggins America. This is a list of advice to aspiring writers. Have you ever wanted to write a book? It's actually easier than ever. I got a book myself. It's called The Life of Human. I don't know that I ever would have gotten that book published if it weren't nowadays. I had an agent and all this stuff and never got a book published and thought, forget it. We're just going to do it the way that everybody does it now, which is through Amazon and Ingram Spark and stuff like that. Message me on Twitter, by the way, if you're interested in doing this and you don't know how. I can put you in touch with some people who, or I can put you in touch with even websites that would point you in the right direction of how to do this. So if you are an aspiring writer, I think you'll be interested in this. If not, if you're just a reader or a consumer of media, this may apply to you too. It's Kurt Vonnegut's advice for writing. And I always put Kurt Vonnegut in this category of people who, you know their names, you might know a couple things by them, and they're good, but never really go back and seek it out. That's for me anyway. That's like Radiohead, the band. I like Radiohead. I like a couple songs by them for sure. I think they're good. Never really have a desire to listen to them. I don't ever pull out a Radiohead CD. I don't even know if I have any Radiohead CDs. I don't know if I have any Vonnegut books either. I've never really sought out more Vonnegut. I do have one short story that I love by him called Harrison Bergeron. I think it starts something like, the year was 2087 and everyone was, everyone was finally equal. So it's a farce. It's a story about how everybody in the world had finally achieved equality, and a guy's sitting alone in his apartment eating some crap, and he turns on the TV and he's watching a beautiful ballerina on the TV, and she's weighted down with all of her arms and legs by birdshot. Because if she were to dance as gracefully as she could, that might offend people who couldn't dance as gracefully as her. It's a great story. It's called Harrison Bergeron by Kurt Vonnegut. Here's his advice for writing. Use the time of a total stranger, as in the person who's reading your stuff, in such a way that he or she will not feel the time was wasted. Good advice. Number two, give the reader at least one character he or she can root for. So you can't make all your characters nasty, awful people. Although in Harrison Bergeron, I really can't think of a protagonist. Actually, at the very end, I think there's a guy that busts into their studio and is trying to tell everybody that equality is not actually achievable or something like that. Maybe he's the guy you root for in that story. Every character should want something, even if it's only a glass of water, even if they just don't really have any huge desires, but they want something. They have to have a motivation is what he's saying. Number four, every sentence must do one of two things in what you write. Reveal character or advance the action. I got to say, I don't know if I agree with all of that because I put a lot of nonsense in my stuff. If you've ever read The Life of Human, you'll know that most characters are driving, moving characters. And then some are there to basically make your eyes roll. Number five, start as close to the end as possible. As in, you don't have to fill out the whole world. Find the point of the story. Start right before it and tell it. Number six, be a sadist. No matter how sweet and innocent your leading characters are, make awful things happen to them in order to see what they're made of. That's interesting. Number seven, write to please just one person. If you open a window and make love to the world, so to speak, your story will get pneumonia. So he's not advocating that your audience be enormous. He's advocating, actually, that you are writing for a very, very particular, specific audience. You know, a lot of this can be applied to really anything you do, even what I'm doing right now. Number eight, give your readers as much information as possible as soon as possible. To hell with suspense. Readers should have such complete understanding of what is going on, where, and why, that they could finish the story themselves should cockroaches eat the last few pages. That is the one piece of advice that I do disagree with him on. I think if you give everything away, see, there's something called the hermeneutic code. I'm going to go into some deeper writing stuff here. The hermeneutic code would suggest that you need to constantly be asking, ooh, why is this character doing this? I don't always know. There's mystery. You're kind of unfolding the mystery as it goes. Even if it's something very plain, a person has broken down the side of the road and they got to fix their tire. Well, why is it taking them so long? Why isn't anybody stopping? There's some mystery you're building. You know, things like that, to me, that drives a story. Blowing your wad at the beginning of the story, I think that's terrible advice. But hey, I'm no Kurt Vonnegut. I can tell you one thing, though, that writing, the reason I even bring this up, writing is like politics. You may wonder how. Well, how, Ryan? Writing is like politics because the solutions are far too easy at times. And when your job is to do things like this, talk about politics, talk about life in general, because it's not just politics, it can be a little bit too easy at times to say, well, I've got the solution. Shouldn't we discuss this more, Ryan? Well, no, but I've got the solution. I actually came across this when I was in writing. I was a creative writing minor in college. And I found myself wanting to get to the end of the story too fast because I always knew what the end was. So I almost had to start building out stories that I didn't know how they ended because I would get there too fast. And that's actually how I write now, is that I have a general idea of where it's going, but I don't exactly know where it's going. I have to let it play out a bit. Therefore, I'm interested in it the whole time, because if I am writing it, am not interested in it, then you, the reader, would definitely not be interested in it if you're bored in getting there. So I got to tell a story. But the problem I came across was, to me, I became a Christian in college. So during my creative writing minor and all these classes I was taking, they would ask you, you know, ask the deep questions. Maybe you don't quite get to the answer. You know, do all of this like slow reveal kind of stuff. Dive in deep. Stuff that's good. But I was like, but there's an answer to all of these questions. It's Christ. You know, it's Jesus. And I find the same thing now to be.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a good time to talk about this over this holiday weekend. Welcome to it. Glad you're here, Wiggins America. This is a list of advice to aspiring writers. Have you ever wanted to write a book? It's actually easier than ever. I got a book myself. It's called The Life of Human. I don't know that I ever would have gotten that book published if it weren't nowadays. I had an agent and all this stuff and never got a book published and thought, forget it. We're just going to do it the way that everybody does it now, which is through Amazon and Ingram Spark and stuff like that. Message me on Twitter, by the way, if you're interested in doing this and you don't know how. I can put you in touch with some people who, or I can put you in touch with even websites that would point you in the right direction on how to do this. So if you are an aspiring writer, I think you'll be interested in this. If not, if you're just a reader or a consumer of media, this may apply to you too. It's Kurt Vonnegut's Advice for Writing. And I always put Kurt Vonnegut in this category of people who, you know their names, you might know a couple things by them, and they're good, but never really go back and seek it out. That's for me anyway. That's like Radiohead, the band. I like Radiohead. I like a couple songs by them for sure. I think they're good. Never really have a desire to listen to them. You know, I don't ever pull out a Radiohead CD. I don't even know if I have any Radiohead CDs. I don't know if I have any Vonnegut books either. I've never really sought out more Vonnegut. I do have one short story that I love by him called Harrison Bergeron. I think it starts something like, the year was 2087 and everyone was finally equal. So it's a farce. It's a story about how everybody in the world had finally achieved equality, and a guy's sitting alone in his apartment eating some crap, and he turns on the TV and he's watching a beautiful ballerina on the TV, and she's weighted down with all of her arms and legs by birdshot, because if she were to dance as gracefully as she could, that might offend people who couldn't dance as gracefully as her. It's a great story. It's called Harrison Bergeron by Kurt Vonnegut. Here's his advice for writing. Use the time of a total stranger, as in the person who's reading your stuff, in such a way that he or she will not feel the time was wasted. Good advice. Number two, give the reader at least one character he or she can root for. So you can't make all your characters nasty, awful people. Although in Harrison Bergeron, I really can't think of a protagonist. Actually, at the very end, I think there's a guy that busts into their studio and is trying to tell everybody that equality is not actually achievable, or something like that. Maybe he's the guy you root for in that story. Every character should want something, even if it's only a glass of water. Even if they just don't really have any huge desires, but they want something. They have to have a motivation, is what he's saying. Number four, every sentence must do one of two things in what you write. Reveal character or advance the action. I gotta say, I don't know if I agree with all of that, because I put a lot of nonsense in my stuff. If you've ever read The Life of Human, you'll know that most characters are driving, moving characters, and then some are there to basically make your eyes roll. Number five, start as close to the end as possible. As in, you don't have to fill out the whole world. Find the point of the story. Start right before it and tell it. Number six, be a sadist. No matter how sweet and innocent your leading characters are, make awful things happen to them in order to see what they're made of. That's interesting. Number seven, write to please just one person. If you open a window and make love to the world, so to speak, your story will get pneumonia. So he's not advocating that your audience be enormous. He's advocating, actually, that you are writing for a very, very particular, specific audience. You know, a lot of this can be applied to really anything you do, even what I'm doing right now. Number eight, give your readers as much information as possible, as soon as possible, to hell with suspense. Readers should have such complete understanding of what is going on, where, and why, that they could finish the story themselves should cockroaches eat the last few pages. That is the one piece of advice that I do disagree with him on. I think if you give everything away, see, there's something called the hermeneutic code. I'm going to go into some deeper writing stuff here. The hermeneutic code would suggest that you need to constantly be asking, ooh, why is this character doing this? I don't always know. There's mystery. You're kind of unfolding the mystery as it goes. Even if it's something very plain, a person has broken down the side of the road and they got to fix their tire. Well, why is it taking them so long? Why isn't anybody stopping? There's some mystery you're building. You know, things like that, to me, that drives a story. Blowing your wad at the beginning of the story, I think that's terrible advice. But hey, I'm no Kurt Vonnegut. I can tell you one thing, though, that writing, the reason I even bring this up, writing is like politics. You may wonder how. Well, how, Ryan? Writing is like politics because the solutions are far too easy at times. And when your job is to do things like this, talk about politics, talk about life in general, because it's not just politics, it can be a little bit too easy at times to say, well, I've got the solution. Shouldn't we discuss this more, Ryan? Well, no, but I got the solution. I actually came across this when I was in writing. I was a creative writing minor in college. And I found myself wanting to get to the end of the story too fast, because I always knew what the end was. So I almost had to start building out stories that I didn't know how they ended, because I would get there too fast. And that's actually how I write now, is that I have a general idea of where it's going, but I don't exactly know where it's going. I have to let it play out a bit. Therefore, I'm interested in it the whole time, because if I am writing it, am not interested in it, then you, the reader, would definitely not be interested in it if you're bored in getting there. So I got to tell a story. But the problem I came across was, to me, I became a Christian in college. So during my creative writing minor and all these classes I was taking, they would ask you, you know, ask the deep questions. Maybe you don't quite get to the answer. You know, do all of this like slow reveal kind of stuff. Dive in deep. Stuff that's good. But I was like, but there's an answer to all of these questions. It's Christ. You know, it's Jesus. And I find the same thing now to be true of politics. That a lot of times when we dive into these big issues, this is why I thought this would be a good one to talk about this weekend as we take a little bit of a breather, you know, holiday weekend. A lot of these deep issues we dive into, and I say this all the time, the political is the surface, but then one step removed, downstream from politics is culture, or I should say culture is ahead of politics, as in politics is downstream from culture, but then go beyond that or deeper than that, and you find that spirituality and morality is really the root of culture, and that's the root of politics. So we come to conclusions about politics or issues that we're having in the world or our country based on the worldview we already have, which comes from spirituality or lack thereof. So when I approach a lot of these political discussions, I just want to get right to the point and go, well, these people just need God. But it's not always quite as easy as that, but so many times it is. And so I love this weekend because it is a weekend where oftentimes we get together as a family, or in this case, we already did, even before Thanksgiving. We had our Thanksgiving a little early. There's a prayer that's said over the family, and it kind of like recenters everybody. It's almost like we need that as a nation, don't we? We need to recenter around just a common prayer that we can say as a nation. I was going to talk about with you, old Roy, having human workers versus robot workers, but we just did that last week. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to do that again. But this headline really leads to that. We don't have to do a long segment here. We probably shouldn't because we don't have a ton of time. Bill Gates says every human will soon have a robot who works on their behalf.
Bill Gates is a moron.
Bill Gates, billionaire, entrepreneur, and co-founder of Microsoft, thinks a big change is coming in the next 5 years. Now, I got to appreciate when somebody puts a timeline on it. Because if you say, well, climate change is going to kill us all, but you say it's going to happen by 2030, then I can test you. He thinks we will all basically have robot assistants. And he is saying that this is going to be a little bit less like a golden retriever kind of character, like a little robot that does things for you, and a little bit more like HAL 9000. So it exists almost more in the cloud, which I'm very disappointed in, because as a person who wrote a book about robots that help people, a fiction book called The Life of Human, which is a fantastic Christmas gift idea.
Oh, yeah, it's a great book.
Which you can go speak to that. I'll give you a couple minutes. Go ahead.
It's a great book. Go buy it.
Oh, my gosh. Stop. Yeah. I didn't know you were going to go so long.
Yeah.
The Life of Human is all about this topic, so I don't even know. I didn't think we'd get there out of this.
Funny how that happened.
Lo and behold. But it is, I mean, highly rated on Amazon and stuff, but it does, none of that matters. The point is the story. That he thinks that we will all have these personal assistants that are kind of AI. I think AI is a little bit overused of a term because you're talking about just increased technology. That I don't know when it becomes AI. Does it have to be sentient? Like, right. At what point do you go, well, that's just better technology, right, versus, oh, no, that's AI. But he says HAL 9000 from 2001, A Space Odyssey, is probably a little bit more what it'll look like. I'm picturing either on your phone or you walk in your house, you can just say, hey, turn the temperature up, turn the lights on, whatever. And that stuff's going to be so fully automated that you really don't have to think about basic stuff.
We already have it. That's the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of the headline, obviously, is going to be designed to
get your eyes,
clickbait or whatever. But yeah, I mean, if you could make the argument, we're already there. I mean, you've got Siri, you've got all the Google and Amazon, everybody's doing it. You can completely automate your house. Everybody's got a phone. And you're not thinking anymore because you've set reminders for everything. You don't have to ever read a map or know where you're going because you just put in the directions. And so we're already there, and it's already destroying society. I think it is.
Why?
Think we're on a downward slide.
Because it makes you dumber?
Yeah. Nobody has to think. It's you know, I've got kids in their 20s, and they're incapable of going anywhere, even places they've been to 100 times, without getting in the car and putting on maps.
Man, I hate to say it, but I kind of do that now. You know what, though? It's anywhere I've been before I used maps, I'm fine with.
Mm-hmm.
But once I started using it, then I have to use it to get there every time now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I agree. It's back to the same trust issue for me. If Bill Gates is saying it, I'm going, but if somebody I trusted said it to me, like if a buddy of mine said, hey, I'm developing this technology and it's really going to change the way you do blank, I'd be like, oh, that's cool. It's my buddy. I trust that guy. It's all about the person saying it with so many of these things to me.
Yeah, I don't like Bill Gates at all. I never have. I think he's a dangerous person because he's got money and stupid ideas. But I don't, that doesn't weigh into this for me. I think we're already there. The genie's been let out of the bottle. What we need is someone with some temperance to step forward and say, you can't go back, as much as I would like to go back to the 1800s, my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do it. It's technology's there. We need to figure out how to live with it. But somebody has to step up and say, let's not have it do everything for us.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start instilling in our young people a work ethic again, or you know, ability for critical thinking and all of these things. That's how we need to react to
some of those things. Seem like they could exist separate from, like, they're two different issues, mm-hmm. but they do blend for sure. Yeah. I think COVID sped a lot of these things up. I'm not going to cite who I was talking to about this, but schools have become more difficult because of tech. And I'm not just talking about tech in school. I'm talking about tech out of school. Hmm. Because kids don't have to think.
Right.
They can do everything by just saying it. They don't have to, like, punch it in to a computer anymore.
Right.
You just say it out loud. Just go, hey, Siri, how many weeks does a kangaroo gestate its young? Well, it's just going to tell you, you know?
Right.
Like, you don't have to think. You don't have to remember anything. You know. I think that's the key, is that, because you're talking about with the maps, you really don't even have to, like, store information in your brain anymore.
Right.
You know that it exists so easily that you've decided, maybe not on purpose, but you have made a decision subconsciously that this information isn't valuable enough for me to keep.
Yeah, so as long as you know where to get it.
Yeah, I know where to get it, so I don't have to keep this information. So it's almost like you're not working the muscle anymore. Mm-hmm. And those who are going to, here's what kind of worries me, the people who are going to work that muscle, they're going to be like the above ground people in the time machine.
Yeah.
And everybody else is going to be the below ground people just grunting out work. Although in that movie, actually, the above ground people were just as stupid. So that was a bad example. But I think you know terrible. What I mean.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to have, like, the elites who are going to be running everything because they've used the brain muscle. And then 95% of all people just being like, oh, well, what's on tonight?
Yeah.
Although, maybe we're already there, and maybe we've always been there, too, you know?
Well, yeah, I don't think we're going in the right direction on it, I'll say that much.
Yeah. I'm popping the question on you right at the end here. Will you marry him? No. It sounded like I was going there, so I had to. This is a big question. Every era that you look at within our lifetime and beyond has been, especially in the arts and, you know, the speed of communications and things like that, has been the golden era of something. Mm-hmm. But you never know it when you're in it.
Yeah.
You know? And so I've been thinking about lately, and if you don't have an answer to this question, because I'm popping it so quickly, that's fine. But what is the golden era that we're in right now? Any thoughts about that before we close?
Oh, we are definitely in the golden era of stupid.
People are going to look back on this and be like, man, those people were stupid.
Exactly.
But you just said we're getting dumber. So comparatively, we'll be smart right now.
Eventually, the pendulum will swing back.
Okay.
And those people will look back and say, I can't believe how stupid those people were in that golden
I don't
era
know who's who anymore. I will say that I think if I had to, I'd say we're in the golden era of convenience tech. Because we're still able to use all these things conveniently, but we can still think, and we still are using them kind of in ways that do just benefit us in the moment. But eventually, that stuff's going to be weaponized against us.
Yeah.
And we're not quite there yet, although we're getting close.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, so socials have already been there. Maybe we've pulled it back a little bit, but we've been there.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're looking back maybe on now, or maybe just before now, and saying, yeah, there was a sweet spot there where we had a lot of conveniences and nobody was really, like, bullying us with them or destroying our lives or manipulating us yet.
Yet. That's the key word.
We'll stop there. This has been Wiggins America. One last book shout out, if you if you need to. Do you need to?
Oh, yeah. It's been bursting out of me to get the book written by our very own Wiggins.
Do you remember the title?
It is called The Adventure of...
Yeah, you're on the right track.
Yeah.
The Adventures.
Human. It has something to do with human.
Yep, The Life of Human. You were right there.
Life of Human.
Yeah. Great book. Roy's read it cover to cover, but not the cover.
I didn't read the cover.
You just read the book.
The inside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You always have trouble with the title. Great Christmas gift. We'll see you next week.
Get more at 971talk.com.
I was going to talk about with you, old Roy, having human workers versus robot workers, but we just did that last week.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to do that again. But this headline really leads to that. We don't have to do a long segment here. We probably shouldn't because we don't have a ton of time. Bill Gates says every human will soon have a robot who works on their behalf.
Bill Gates is a moron.
Bill Gates, billionaire, entrepreneur, and co-founder of Microsoft, thinks a big change is coming in the next 5 years. Now, I got to appreciate when somebody puts a timeline on it. Because if you say, well, climate change is going to kill us all, but you say it's going to happen by 2030, then I can test you. He thinks we will all basically have robot assistants. And he is saying that this is going to be a little bit less like a golden retriever kind of character, like a little robot that does things for you, and a little bit more like HAL 9000. So it exists almost more in the cloud, which I'm very disappointed in, because as a person who wrote a book about robots that help people, a fiction book called The Life of Human, which is a fantastic Christmas gift idea.
Oh, yeah. It's a great book.
Which you can go speak to that. I'll give you a couple minutes. Go ahead.
It's a great book. Go buy it.
Oh, my gosh. Stop. I didn't know you were going to go so long.
Yeah.
Yeah, The Life of Human is all about this topic, so I don't even know. I didn't think we'd get there out of this.
Funny
but
how that happened.
Lo and behold. But it is, I mean, highly rated on Amazon and stuff, but it does, none of that matters. The point is the story. That he thinks that we will all have these personal assistants that are kind of AI. I think AI is a little bit overused of a term because you're talking about just increased technology. That I don't know when it becomes AI. Does it have to be sentient? Like,
right.
At what point do you go, well, that's just better technology,
right,
versus, oh, no, that's AI. But he says HAL 9000 from 2001 A Space Odyssey is probably a little bit more what it'll look like. I'm picturing either on your phone or you walk in your house, you can just say, hey, turn the temperature up, turn the lights on, whatever. And that stuff's going to be so fully automated that you really don't have to think about basic stuff.
We already have it. That's the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of the headline, obviously, is going to be designed to
get your eyes,
clickbait or whatever. But yeah, I mean, if you could make the argument, we're already there. I mean, you've got Siri, you've got all the Google and Amazon, everybody's doing it. You can completely automate your house. Everybody's got a phone. And you're not thinking anymore because you've set reminders for everything. You don't have to ever read a map or know where you're going because you just put in the directions. And so we're already there, and it's already destroying society. I think it is.
Why?
Think we're on a downward slide.
Because it makes you dumber?
Yeah. Nobody has to think. It's you know... I've got kids in their 20s, and they're incapable of going anywhere, even places they've been to 100 times, without getting in the car and putting on maps.
Man, I hate to say it, but I kind of do that now. You know what, though? It's anywhere I've been before I used maps, I'm fine with.
Mm-hmm.
But once I started using it, then I have to use it to get there every time now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I agree. It's back to the same trust issue for me. If Bill Gates is saying it, I'm going, but if somebody I trusted said it to me, like if a buddy of mine said, hey, I'm developing this technology and it's really going to change the way you do blank, I'd be like, oh, that's cool. It's my buddy. I trust that guy. It's all about the person saying it with so many of these things to me.
Yeah, I don't like Bill Gates at all. I never have. I think he's a dangerous person because he's got money and stupid ideas. But I don't. That doesn't weigh into this for me. I think we're already there. The genie's been let out of the bottle. What we need is someone with some temperance to step forward and say, you can't go back, as much as I would like to go back to the 1800s, my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do it. It's technology's there. We need to figure out how to live with it. But somebody has to step up and say, let's not have it do everything for us.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start instilling in our young people a work ethic again, or ability for critical thinking and all of these things. That's how we need to react to
some of those things. Seem like they could exist separate from, like, they're two different issues, mm-hmm. but they do blend for sure. Yeah. I think COVID sped a lot of these things up. I'm not going to cite who I was talking to about this, but schools have become more difficult because of tech. And I'm not just talking about tech in school. I'm talking about tech out of school. Hmm. Because kids don't have to think.
Right.
They can do everything by just saying it. They don't have to, like, punch it into a computer anymore.
Right.
You just say it out loud. Just go, hey, Siri, how many weeks does a kangaroo gestate its young? Well, it's just going to tell you, you know.
Right.
Like, you don't have to think. You don't have to remember anything. You know. I think that's the key, is that, because you're talking about with the maps, you really don't even have to, like, store information in your brain anymore.
Right.
You know that it exists so easily that you've decided, maybe not on purpose, but you have made a decision subconsciously that this information isn't valuable enough for me to keep.
Yeah, so as long as you know where to get it.
Yeah, I know where to get it, so I don't have to keep this information. So it's almost like you're not working the muscle anymore. Mm-hmm. And those who are going to, here's what kind of worries me. The people who are going to work that muscle, they're going to be like the above ground people in the time machine.
Yeah.
And everybody else is going to be the below ground people just grunting out work. Although in that movie, actually, the above ground people were just as stupid. So that was a bad example. But I think you know
terrible.
What I mean.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to have, like, the elites who are going to be running everything because they've used the brain muscle. And then 95% of all people just being like, what's on tonight?
Yeah.
Although, maybe we're already there, and maybe we've always been there, too, you know?
Well, yeah, I don't think we're going in the right direction on it. I'll say that much.
Yeah. I'm popping a question on you right at the end here. Will you marry her? it sounded like I was going there, so I had to. This is a big question. Every era that you look at within our lifetime and beyond has been, especially in the arts and, you know, the speed of communications and things like that, has been the golden era of something. Mm-hmm. But you never know it when you're in it.
Yeah.
You know? And so I've been thinking about lately, and if you don't have an answer to this question, because I'm popping it so quickly, that's fine. But what is the golden era that we're in right now? Any thoughts about that before we close?
Oh, we are definitely in the golden era of stupid.
People are going to look back on this and be like, man, those people were stupid.
Exactly.
But you just said we're getting dumber. So comparatively, we'll be smart right now.
Eventually, the pendulum will swing back.
Okay.
And those people will look back and say, I can't believe how stupid those people were in that golden era.
I don't know who's who anymore. I will say that I think if I had to, I'd say we're in the golden era of convenience tech. Because we're still able to use all these things conveniently, but we can still think, and we still are using them kind of in ways that do just benefit us in the moment. But eventually, that stuff's going to be weaponized against us.
Yeah.
And we're not quite there yet, although we're getting close.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So socials have already been there. Maybe we've pulled it back a little bit, but we've been there.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're looking back maybe on now, or maybe just before now, and saying, yeah, there was a sweet spot there where we had a lot of conveniences and nobody was really, like, bullying us with them or destroying our lives or manipulating us yet.
Yet. That's the key word.
We'll stop there. This has been Wiggins America. One last book shout out if you need to. Do you need to?
Oh, yeah. It's been bursting out of me to get the book written by our very own Wiggins.
Do you remember the title?
It is called The Adventures of...
Yeah, you're on the right track.
Yeah.
The Adventures.
Human. It has something to do with human.
Yep, The Life of Human. You were right there.
Life of Human.
Yeah. Great book. Roy's read it cover to cover. But not the cover.
I didn't read the cover.
You just read the book.
The inside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You always have trouble with the title. Great Christmas gift. We'll see you next week.
Get more at 971talk.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.